Regulated militia be necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad to be with you today. Glad you are with me as well. I am feeling better than I was yesterday. I don't know what that was. One day bug. Maybe it was just a super allergies. I don't know. But whatever the reason, got a much better night's sleep tonight or last night. And yeah. Feeling refreshed and ready to go, and ready to have our conversation with Diana Mueller from Women for Gun Rights. Some big changes for the group, and I think for the better. I had the opportunity to sit down with Di earlier today and talk about what these changes mean for the mission for Women for Gun Rights. Take a look and a listen. Diana, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of exciting stuff going on with Women for Gun Rights, including... some big changes, I guess we should say, right?
Yeah, it's like we're growing up. We're launching first ever our paid membership model. So a lot of people have been in our corner for a long time, and now we're structuring it's pretty cool, I think, because there is an ROI to our membership beyond just the discounts and the membership benefits. So what we've dedicated to doing is a raffle every month. And if you are in our top two, there's three tiers of memberships. And if you're in our top two tiers, you get automatically entered into that raffle every month. So if you're spending $100 on the membership, you're getting a $200 value from the tickets alone. You'll get a t-shirt, our signature t-shirt, and some other swag things there. But we want you to, proudly represent the Teal for 2A mission whenever they go anywhere, you know, the grocery store all the way up to their state capitals.
You know, and you all do have a presence at state capitals. I'm assuming at grocery stores as well, but also in Washington, D.C. I mean, you've been doing the annual fly-in. How many years now?
This is actually our 10th year. So when we started, your listeners may remember that we were the DC Project because I didn't want to start another organization. And here God has me of having a full-blown organization, and now we have paid membership. So, but when we started, it was just one woman from every state meeting in Washington, DC once a year. And then once we saw the attacks in the states, I was like, oh, you know, ladies, how do you feel about going back to your states and doing the same thing at the state level, being the state director? So that's what it's been for the past 10 years is us meeting in Washington, D.C. And then about 2019, 2020, we moved to and we opened our doors to the membership, but it was a free membership. So this is exciting because we need the revenue builder. And this is one good way to let people support us if they believe in our mission.
And so, I mean, obviously, again, you talk about the benefits of this membership, But what are you hoping to do with this revenue? Where is this money going to be directed?
That's a great question. So obviously we have expenses. As we grow, we're trying to hire people. This has been an all-volunteer organization. So some of it will be to that. But our programs are what's so exciting and what needs funded. We have an amazing project called In Her Defense that We the Free Streaming has produced. And it's just sitting there waiting for somebody to swoop in there and fund it. We have 9 ladies that are canned right now that have their stories. I wish I could show you, or maybe I'll send you the link of the trailer. They created a great trailer. And then we also have our annual fly-in, which is the exciting part is that we are opening it up as a national conference and we're opening it up to our members. So for the first time, people can actually come to Washington, D.C. with us and have that experience of being on Capitol Hill, walking the halls of Congress, going to a rally and things like that. So that's the biggest, I think the biggest news is our membership as well as the fly-in that's going to open to the members. This year, the fly-in, we're calling it a national conference, but it is September 12th through the 14th. We're going to have a gala on Saturday night. We're going to have a conference and a rally on Sunday. And then Monday, we'll be walking Capitol Hill. And we're going to take care of everybody. You don't have to feel like you're not ready or you're not prepared to do something like this. We're going to make sure that everybody is in a small group and has a leader and has a tour guide and they'll take care of everybody. You just got to get on the train and take the ride.
You know, and again, I mean, this is an opportunity for women to speak directly to lawmakers and their staff about these issues that, again, I mean, are so important. And this is an election year, which is also, you know, a very important consideration. I think politicians have to earn our votes when it comes to protecting our right to keep and bear arms. But, you know, also, I mean, you talk again about how this has grown. And I remember I think I was at the first fly-in when you all were the DC project. And, you know, seeing these women from all across the country, I don't think you had full 50 states represented back then. I think you do now. And again, to open it up to the membership, you know, I look at what we see the other side doing, like Moms Demand Action, right? And obviously, they're very big on getting anti-gun volunteers. They're looking to grow leaders, right? I mean, Virginia's Governor Abigail Spanberger was heavily involved with Moms Demand Action, and even before she ran for Congress. And I think that, you know, they sort of identified her as somebody with a good story, somebody who, you know, who was a compelling speaker, maybe a compelling candidate. Do you see Women for Gun Rights playing any kind of that same role where, you know, you get these members who are obviously very passionate about protecting their right to keep and bear arms, identifying some folks and saying, you know what, I think it'd be great on a school board. I think it'd be great in county commission. I think it'd be great in public office, not just, you know, flying into Washington, D.C., but maybe serving constituents in Washington, D.C.
I love that you asked that question. Yes, I don't think our side really understands how deliberate and intentional the anti-gunners are. People that should, in my opinion, know who Moms Demand Action is and in every town for gun safety. Nobody really, I talk to people and they tell me they don't know who they are. And I'm like, okay, well, they're working to take away our Second Amendment rights. And Women for Gun Rights definitely is the hole. That's the hole that we plug that nobody else is plugging. We can speak to directly to Moms Demand Action and say, we want our firearms. It makes us safer, as opposed to what they're saying. But here's the fun part. Cheryl Todd always calls us the leadership incubator. And we have had ladies run. We have Kathy Love in Montana. She was successful. Marjorie Taylor Greene actually came to Washington, D.C. before she ran. And right now we have Mira O'Connell out of New Mexico that is running against the incumbent Senator Luan in New Mexico. So he is a hardcore anti-gun. And honestly, she's running as an independent, and that is the only path forward that you can get any kind of conservative voice that's going to serve the conservatives and the rural New Mexicans. Mm-hmm. So we're pretty excited about that. I mean, it's a David and Goliath situation. So I'm glad you asked about that, because if there's anybody in New Mexico, go check out, I think it's mirrorfornewmexico.com. Mira O'Connell. And then we also have a gal running in Rhode Island for a state Senate seat. So you ask where the money goes. And these are the kind of programs, these are the kind of output that we put in just for volunteers and stuff like that. We could exponentially magnify our message and our programs if we had our own Bloomberg.
Right. Yeah. I think the Second Amendment crowd definitely needs its own Bloomberg. Frankly, the gun control group has more than one billionaire, right? They've got Paul Allen. They've got Michael Bloomberg. They've got George Soros. They have no shortage of, donors with very deep pockets who are committed to these organizations. It would be great if we had that, and I hope that you all get one. But I also hope that, you're able to grow the organization through rank and file memberships. And we are seeing that, I think some of the candidates that you talked about, some of the folks who are already in elected office, Rebecca Schmoe, state representative in Kansas, who is doing a great job. We are seeing those inroads being made, but I think that there is a lot more that could be done. And I it scares me that you've got folks who are, you know, passionate about this issue who don't necessarily understand what the other side is doing, because we do need to pay attention. We do need to be aware. And, you know, I mean, they're playing the long game. They have a ton of resources. And, you know, if we just assume that, that we're going to win because our cause is just, that's we're in for some really unwelcome surprises.
That's why the women's voice is so mission critical to safeguarding the Second Amendment, because of those, you know, Moms Demand has been very effective in winning the hearts and minds. And it's really easy to do when you say, we need to protect kids. And I'm like, we can say the same thing. We agree. We need to protect kids, but we have the means to protect them and you do not. That's very important for that to come out of a woman, to counter that woman's effectiveness from Moms Demand action.
All right. So, you know, obviously, again, the name of the group is Women for Gun Rights. Can guys sign up and become members if they want?
Absolutely. Like I said, we just sit here and look at the $60 million machine that we're up against, and they welcome men, and men have moms and daughters and sisters, and, you know, come on board and tell the women in your life that, you know, we need their stories and we need their voices.
Awesome. All right. So what's the website? Where can folks actually get involved?
Womenforgunrights.org. Women, the number, or something, the number, it's F-O-R. gunrights.org. And also, let me sneak in this. We just launched a C3 called Women for Gun Safety. So trying to take those words back, and then those independent, you know, those Bloomberg types and those philanthropic types, they can actually get that tax benefit from our C3. So it's womenforgunsafety.org and womenforgunrights.org. So that's pretty exciting as well.
Fantastic. Diana, listen, I really appreciate you spending a couple of minutes with us today. Look forward to doing this again soon. And if I can, I'll make it up to D.C. on the weekend of September the 12th.
I love it. Let's do it.
All right. Thanks. Diana Muller joining us here on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. My thanks to Diana Muller for joining us on the program. And looking forward to having her back again very soon. Tomorrow, by the way, we're going to be talking with New York attorney Amy Bellantoni about a decision out of New York City. Not only did the plaintiff win, but I believe this is the first time that a plaintiff challenging a New York City gun control law has actually been awarded damages and attorney fees, which is good to see some progress being made. So we'll talk about that with Amy Bellantoni on tomorrow's Cam & Company. Before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, though, let's talk about this for just 1 second. From city streets, maybe even New York City streets, to mountain trails, your gear should go wherever life takes you. And that's why at Modern Rugged Leather, every bag is handcrafted from premium, responsibly sourced leather. It's designed to look sharp, last long, and tell a story all its own. Each stitch, each buckle, every strap reflecting timeless craftsmanship, and it's backed by a lifetime warranty, because quality should not quit when the adventure begins. So whether it's the boardroom or the back roads, Modern Rugged Leather helps you carry confidence every step of the way. Modern Rugged Leather, modern style, timeless durability, and it's backed for life. Life takes you places. Make sure your gear keeps up. Shop the full collection and find yours today at modernrugged.com. Again, that is modernrugged.com. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story. Good deed of the day and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case from Chicago. Two men charged with robbing boy at Green Line Station, one of them on pretrial release for having a gun at the very same stop. Yes, by the way, the Supreme Court did relist Schoenthal versus Raul for consideration in this Friday's conference. That is the challenge to the ban on carry on public transit in Illinois. And the CTA's prohibition on lawful carry as well. This case has gone back and forth, so it was interesting. I mean, the cert petition was filed back in October. The state of Illinois originally declined to reply. The Supreme Court ordered them to do so, which means that at least one justice is interested in this case. Got scheduled for conference, and then it got pulled from it was actually, I guess, one conference did take place and was pulled from consideration, so it wasn't heard in the next conference, and that was seen as a bad sign. Maybe, you know, the denial of cert, and maybe there's going to be a written objection to that, or a written dissent. Now all of a sudden it's back on the list of cases to be considered in conference. So I don't know what that means. Hopefully it's good news, because as I wrote about at Bearing Arms today, there have been a number of brutal, violent crimes that have taken place on CTA property just since the cert petition was filed on October 31st. This is one of them. I mean, I have to say, you've got two individuals accused of robbing a 17-year-old boy, along with a juvenile, by the way, who was arrested, whose name has not been released. There is a fourth individual also involved in this same robbery, who has not been identified, has not been arrested. But the two adults in this case, 19-year-old Stephen Edwards, 20-year-old Xander Simmons, are accused of being part of this group of four who surrounded the teenager at a Green Line stop back on February 18th. They took his chain, they took his backpack, they took other items. The judge has ordered them held on robbery charges, so right now they're detained pending trial. That could change, though, at any time. And one of these individuals, Stephen Edwards, was out. No, excuse me. I'm sorry. It was Xander Simmons, the 20-year-old. He was arrested last July at the same Green Line station after police allegedly found him on the platform in possession of a firearm with a magazine. By the way, that was banned in Illinois. So, yeah, that magazine ban is working out real well. Prosecutors had asked a Cook County judge to keep Simmons detained at the time, but Murphy said no and let him loose. I don't think even on electronic monitoring, just no. He'll come back and, you know, when his court date happens. Meanwhile, Stephen Edwards also has a previous criminal history. He has a recent felony gun conviction, I believe, for possessing a firearm as a prohibited person, because he also has a juvenile adjudication for carjacking. I'm telling you, I've stopped trying to cover every violent crime that occurs on CTA property. For a period of time, actually, I did try to do that because I wanted to make the case that, you know, look, here is this gun-free zone that is not gun-free. It certainly is not free of violent crime, and people should be able to protect themselves. A U.S. District Court judge actually found in favor of the plaintiffs in Schoenthal versus Rowell, but that decision was overturned by the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, which held that concealed carry can be banned in virtually every public space where there might be a crowd of people. I just completely eviscerated the Bruin decision, which is yet another reason why the Supreme Court needs to take Schoenthal versus Rowell. But anyway, I couldn't keep up. I mean, I could, but I just thought, you know, the Bearing Arms readers are going to get bored reading the same story again and again and again and again and again, because I literally could be writing these stories multiple times per week. That is how unserious the gun-free status of CTA property is in Chicago. And I do hope that the Supreme Court grants cert in Schoenthal versus Rule, overturns the Seventh Circuit, restores some sanity in that circuit, and people can protect themselves on CTA property. They don't have to worry about being robbed or sexually assaulted or set on fire or shot or stabbed by individuals who, again, no stranger to law enforcement and have no intention of complying with CTA policy. On to today's armed citizen story from Maryland, where a grand jury has ruled that a juvenile acted in self-defense in a fatal shooting in Washington County. You know, we've talked about these circumstances before. It is not, in fact, I think we talked about this with Amy Swearer not long ago. I won't say that cases of juveniles acting in armed self-defense are commonplace, but they're certainly not unheard of. And yet, we've got laws in many states, including a bill that was passed in Virginia. I'm 100% sure that Governor Abigail Spanberger is going to allow this bill to become law, whether or not she signs it into law, that requires any gun owner who has a juvenile in the home to keep that firearm locked up and inaccessible to that juvenile. There is supposedly an exception if that juvenile uses the firearm in self-defense. But again, how's that supposed to happen if you're supposed to keep that firearm locked up and accessible to them? Now, this is why I say these one-size-fits-all storage mandates don't work. They're a bad idea. Parents do need to be able to decide for themselves when their child is responsible enough to have access to that firearm. And if something bad happens, you could argue that the parents should, you know, shoulder some of the blame there, but it makes no sense to me that, you know, the parents of a 17-year-old or a 16-year-old who is well-versed in real gun safety, who is responsible, does not have any, you know, mental health issues, why they would not be able to access a firearm if need be for self-defense. And this case again out of Maryland, I think, is a perfect example of why these one-size-fits-all policies are just a bad idea. So a little bit of background on this case. This actually happened last month. The shooting happened last month. Washington County Sheriff's Office did not present a lot of details at the time. They said they were called out for a reported shooting. Once on the scene, they found a 43-year-old Brian Keith Lavoie Jr. with multiple gunshot wounds. First responders performed life-saving measures. He was taken to local hospital, but he was pronounced dead. At the time, the sheriff's office said preliminary investigation indicates this is an isolated incident and there is no known threat to the public. And we still don't have a lot of information about what led to the shooting. But after reviewing the facts of this case, a grand jury in Washington County determined that the juvenile who shot Lavoie was justified in doing so, and they declined to return an indictment against that juvenile. According to DC News Now, the ruling followed an extensive investigation in which the Washington County Sheriff's Office Criminal Investigation Unit determined that the juvenile fired the gun but was acting, quote, in defense of self and others. So, again, don't have a lot of circumstances. The Sheriff's Office said in a statement, due to the involvement of a juvenile and in order to protect the privacy rights of those involved, no additional information will be released at this time. I assume someone could file a Freedom of Information Act request and maybe get more details. And again, these are going to be some assumptions here. I'm not reporting this as fact, but based on the sheriff's statement, I suspect that this may have been a domestic incident. Don't know the relationship of Lavoie to the juvenile or others in the home, but typically, if this was a home intruder, I don't think the sheriff's office would be so reluctant to share those details. So, regardless of the circumstances, this juvenile in Washington County, Maryland, again, according to a grand jury and according to the sheriff's office, acted to protect himself and to protect others in that home against the deadly threat that was posed by Brian Keith Lavoie Jr. Finally, today's good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. Also, a case of a juvenile stepping up, a 9-year-old in Michigan who, a day after getting a lesson in CPR, ended up putting that lesson to work and saved the life of a, I believe it was his pastor. Logan Vangemer is the 9-year-old's name. He actually got a cape after watching a CPR training video. He said, in fact, he watched the video because he wanted the cape. He said, but I didn't know the next day that he would have to do CPR. So a day after watching this video and getting his cape, Logan went to church. There was a couple, Tom and Beth Adrians, who were filling in as the youth group leader that week. Someone was on vacation. And it was during worship that Tom Adrians collapsed. He said, I had my hands up, and then I just went down just like instantly. He had a chair on the way down, so he's bleeding in two places. He's face down on the floor. His wife rushes over, but she tries to talk to him. She said there was just no comprehension in his eyes. She says there's blood dripping down from his forehead. So Beth yells out for help, trying to turn her husband over, but she couldn't do it. And that's when Logan stepped in. Beth said he's little for his age, so I thought there's no way. But the pair managed to turn Tom over onto his back. Logan said, God gave me natural strength to roll Tom over. Beth tried to start chest compressions first, but she said something stopped her. She said, it's my husband of 45 years, right? She said, I'm used to feeling resistance there, pushing on the chest. And she said, there wasn't. And she said, that really freaked me out. And I just threw my hands up in the air and I said, I can't do this. And Logan said, I can, Miss Beth. I know CPR. He performed CPR on Tom Adrians for about 5 minutes while Beth was at the back of the room crying, praying for her husband's life. She said, I realized I'm going to be a widow. I'm a widow now. And I'm going to have to learn how to rely on God myself without him. Logan says he was crying too. He said, I was just worried he wasn't going to survive, but he kept going. And after 6 minutes of CPR, the church's safety team used an artificial defibrillator that was there on site, was able to shock Tom's heart, and he got a heartbeat. He was unconscious for 3.5 days, but when he came to in the hospital, doctors said there was no brain damage. They later found out that all of Tom's arteries, every one of them, all of his arteries to his heart were blocked 90 to 99%. He had been completely asymptomatic, no sign of this beforehand. And again, if it were not for Logan Vandenbort's actions and the actions of that church security team, Vandenbort, rather, I'm sorry, I almost called Logan Voldemort, Logan Vandenbort, Tom wouldn't be here today. I mean, this truly is an extraordinary circumstance. Logan actually visited Tom at the hospital. Tom told a WZZM TV, he said, there's my hero as he's walking through the door of my room. He said, I was wondering what I was going to say to him. And I thought, I'm just going to say how I feel. So, you know, again, I mean, just in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, earning that cape, man. a superhero of sorts, Logan Vandenbort there in Martin, Michigan. We thank you for your very, very good deed. And that is all the time we've got for you on this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I really appreciate you being a part of the program. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Again, we're going to be talking with Amy Bellantoni, New York firearms attorney, about a successful case in New York City. Looking forward to talking about that. It's always nice when we can talk about a defeat for the anti-gun forces in the Big Apple. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today, though. We are keeping you up to date on a variety of lawsuits, legislation, regulation. Today is the deadline for Canadians to hand over their banned firearms if they want to receive compensation. And it's not going too well. As of last week, government said it collected 51,000 firearms from about 26,000 gun owners. They were anticipating getting about 136,000 guns. And according to one public official in Saskatchewan, the actual number of firearms that were banned that are there in Canada, somewhere between 1 and 2 million. So the government had anticipated apparently only collecting about 10% of that number. Maybe even less. And they, I don't think they're going to manage that. But we've got coverage on that compensated confiscation effort and a whole lot more what's going on south of the border here in the United States as well. If you like what you see, I would also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. Use the promo code FIGHT and you can get 60% off your membership. You get all kinds of great benefits no matter what tier of support you choose. And no matter what tier you should choose, you will be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms. And I want to thank you for that. Just a reminder, though, VIP Gold and Platinum members, you get among the benefits you get. You get to hang out with Hot Airs at Morrissey and myself every Wednesday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern. We do a live chat. Lasts at least an hour. It often runs a little bit longer than that. But it is your chance to talk about whatever you want. And we're there to talk with you about it. It's my favorite hour of the work week. We'd love for you to be a part of it. Again, just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT to take 60% off your VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum memberships. Have a great rest of your 2A Tuesday. I'll be on Newsmax with Carl Higbee in the 6 p.m. Eastern hour. And I'll see you again here tomorrow for the Wednesday edition of Bearing Arms Gaming Company. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.